So we took a break and now we are back. Question about the hero's journey. There are a variety of hero's journeys humans can take in life, and there are, I feel like, different ways erotic mysticism can relate back to it. I want to focus on a very specific and difficult one that I think erotic mysticism could really be beneficial in, because I don't think most religions are. When people have been a victim, when people have been made victims by sexual assault, how can erotic mysticism help them reclaim and heal their bodies? Most religions, I feel like, do not do a great job with this. You know, the Old Testament is like, oh, haha, you gotta marry your rapist. And you look at the New Testament and it tells you to just forgive them. I don't like either of those. I mean, just gonna be frank. Let's just say someone seriously violates someone else's body. How can your movement help someone recover their sense of power, and what would you recommend they do?
Just looking at what happens is when people are in somewhat of a sexual assault or has an experience like that, a part of their energy, their soul, their identity is taken from them, right? There's a huge aspect of them that is really taken from them, and that absolutely breaks my heart first and foremost. And I think really when you kind of lean into other religions, they're like, either forgive or shove it down. Right? Forgive, shove it down.
Away.
It doesn't happen. It's very much a black and white, right? Which nobody wants to feel any of those things. And so looking at some of the teachings that we've shared, becoming self-sourced, looking at the shadow aspect of things, it really encourages those emotions to actually be felt. Because when someone's feeling that trauma, a big part of it is this, there's this huge disconnect and confusion in the body where they're like, why did this happen? And we're in this confusion of rationalizing and creating a story and to justify what has happened, what had happened.
And they usually go through a phase of self-blame.
Exactly, a phase of self-blame and all of this whole kind of spiral out of control. And so the thing about being able to embrace the shadow or the totality of everything is creating space for those emotions to actually come out without being judged, without being, oh, you're too much, you're being too crazy about any of that. How about, you know what? A horrible thing happened to you. Let's feel it. Let's look at it.
The grief, the rage.
Let's look at the grief. Let's look at the rage. Let's have all of that. And what happens when we're able to move these emotions, move this energy and be witnessed in it without having to suppress it, that's how we can actually move past it and grow through it versus saying, just shove it down there. Just shove it down. It didn't happen. Instead of that, how would it feel if you were like, yeah, I would love to hear everything that you feel about it in its fullness, and that is okay, and you are safe to do that. How about that? Let's just feel it so that we can all be here with you, because you know what? That was really messed up. And if we want to grow through it, let's actually feel it and face it and understand it so that we can ultimately let it move through our bodies. And what happens when people experience these sorts of traumas is they either shut off, disassociate, become numb, which means it's not safe to feel any of this anymore, or it becomes some twisted kink or some sort of twisted Stockholm syndrome kind of an experience, which are, again, both going on the polarities of like, never again, I'm just going to shut it off, or it's going to go super extreme. What about all the beauty in between? And so the practice of erotic mysticism, where it's just by lifestyle, you're not afraid to lean into these things because there are healthy channels. There are ways to make it sacred, both the good, the bad, and the beautiful, everything and everything in between, right? Allows for the moving of these traumas or these emotions and the safety to say, hey, that was really messed up. Let's actually let it fly. I'm not afraid of that.
When rage is suppressed in the body, it literally creates disorder in ourselves. And we're so afraid of rage because look at the lineages we've come from, where it was so people would fly off the handle, grandfathers, fathers, mothers would fly off the handle, and they would create trauma. It was unchecked, unintegrated, unconscious rage, you know? where they would almost be possessed by it. But now, when you have these practices and you create these safe containers to like express what's hidden, and you can finally like rage it out in a safe way of like punching pillows, screaming into a pillow, screaming out, like actually screaming. Like I have clients who have never screamed in their life, like women whose throats are so shut down. To finally be able to scream is one of the most healing things that they can experience, to find and claim their voice again. So that's a really important piece, because emotion just wants to be in motion. So you've got to move it. And we move it with breath. We move it with sounding. And then that stuck stuff starts transforming. And there's other things we can do, like we do somatic storytelling, where you restory the programs in the body that have come from trauma and come from wounding, and you implement a new story and new feelings around it in the nervous system. So you're actually reprogramming and repatterning the nervous system around these traumas and wounds. It's super, super important. And it's all about reclaiming your sexual energy as your own. If you've had sexual trauma, it feels like someone else took control of your sexuality, right? They stole something from you. They were in power and you were not. You were disempowered. You were the victim. And so it's a process of taking back that energy that they took from you, literally. And like you can do visualization exercises around that, embodiment exercises to physically, energetically, emotionally, mentally take back your power, take back your energy, and become sovereign and the ruler of your own sexual life force again, and create badass boundaries so that no one is going to cross that again. And you can be the warrior or warrioress of your boundaries, protecting yourself, you know, while also learning how to be soft and open the walls when it feels safe and when it feels like, ooh, I'm going to be honored because I know how to honor myself, and I'm going to open myself only to those who honor me to that level that I now honor myself.
Gonna be honest. I find erotic mysticism very interesting right now because of a story my friend, someone I care for very deeply, told me about her experiences in the spiritual community. I'm just going to put like a big trigger warning on this for all of my listeners. I feel like if you've gotten this far, you're probably okay. Just in case, it's pretty bad. So she was friends with a couple, and she'd been friends with them for a few years. They effectively took advantage of her using plant-based medicine that they gave to her. He ended up having a negative reaction to the drug they had given her and dying. Like literally, he's 6 feet under, which, yeah, I said it was trigger. It was like a big story. We were talking about it and she was like, yeah, I just feel like I'm clicking a seatbelt. She's like, I don't feel sad. I don't feel happy. It just feels like a natural karma. When you think about Christian mysticism, erotic mysticism, there is a huge concept of karma and just letting the universe deal with it. I've heard the universe will take care of it for you so many times. When you look at bad actors in your community, is that your general sentiment? Can you just tell me?
If someone is behaving out of integrity in your community and you hear of this, I don't think it should ever be swept under the rug. I don't think it should just be, oh, cosmic whatever is going to take care of this. This is like, now it's my responsibility. If you're a community member of mine, we're going to have a discussion, and we're even going to have a community forum to talk about this. It's happened to me. It happened in Tulum, where it was like someone that was on the outskirts of our community, but that was kind of like coming in on the edges. And there was a violation of one of the women in my community, and it involved plant medicine. And we had a forum, we had a roundtable, we had a community gathering where we confronted this. And we had both of them there, and she spoke her story and he spoke his story. And we had a whole mediation around it. And I mean, therapists can be involved. It can go very, very deep, but I don't think it should ever, ever be just, oh, the universe will take care of it. Like, if someone is violating the agreements, is violating integrity, and is harming someone in your community, that needs to be taken extraordinarily seriously. There needs to be some kind of something around justice and remediation. And if their actions are so severe that it has like, it gets to this point of like full like violation in some way, then they should be removed from the community. There are times when there needs to be removal, you know, or there needs to be reports to police. Like that's a real thing. And I mean, you can give people second chances if they're like actually like owning and taking responsibility and they're getting help. There could also be patterns of this. And some people don't ever come out of that pattern. And then there needs to be serious consequences. That's my opinion.
Right. So I feel like you can divide people into two camps. There are so many ways to divide people, but I feel like people who value justice versus people who value mercy, it's a unique framework. And I do feel like half of the people I meet definitely value justice over mercy. And a lot of people will go, oh, no, you know, you can have justice and then mercy. Ultimately, I think it's between one or the other. Like someone goes to jail and it's justice. You forgive someone and you release them from your life and it's mercy. I just want to be clear because I think people sometimes mistake justice for vengeance. Justice is not lording something someone bad has done over them repeatedly. Like the friend I'm talking about, she didn't even wish these people ill when she heard the news of his death. She wasn't happy or sad. She just felt like it was a natural karmic consequence, right? Like she was fed MDMA. The thing he died of is the most common side effect for men who take MDMA. She felt like that was the universe doling out justice for her, not necessarily mercy. So yeah, you know, it's just like part two things in life, two ways to live.
To me, like kind of to what I was saying earlier is life, in my opinion, is really reconciling paradox. So I believe that really there's a combination of mercy and justice that plays through in all of these. And so, you know, do I think that one should just lay back and let the universe take care of it? Absolutely not. I think that's bypassing. I think that's you being equally as guilty, just watching a train wreck happening and not saying something about it, right? And so that's like the free will aspect of life where it's like, yeah, actually you have the free will to say something about it and make action happen versus saying, I have no choice. My hands are tied. I'm sorry. Karma's going to get, you know, and while simultaneously, I do believe that energetically things are going to come around eventually, right? Whether in this lifetime or the next, that's a whole nother conversation. But I believe that energetically, the universe will balance itself out. And as the universe is balancing itself out, if you trust that energy flow, that's you being moved by the universe to balance it out by saying, hey, this is wrong. This is what I stand for. You're out of integrity. We need to have a conversation about this. And I think that also balancing that out with the compassion, love, forgiveness aspect of it, while also being stern, while also being strong, while also calling it like it is. I think it should be a combination of both. I love you and this is wrong. Right? It's not like you're an evil, horrible, blah, blah, blah person and you're just going to be condemned to death. No, it's like, hey, let's have a real conversation about this because it's not cool.
You're not evil, but the action you did was wrong.
Right. So let's have a conversation about it. And there's very, very hard boundaries around this. This is not okay. And I'm going to be absolutely clear with you about this. This is not okay. You're hurting other people. You're hurting this person. This is out of integrity. We need to talk about this as a tribe, as a group, as a community, whatever that may be. And I think that to me, that's probably the best way we can deal with conflict in community settings. And there's always something that's going to come up. Let's be real. Like there's always something that's going to come up. And so instead of saying you're the evil villain, we're going to cast you out and burn you at the stake. Rather, let's be like, hey, as a tribe, as a group, let's actually talk about this. We're going to be real about it, but we're also going to have a heart about it. To me, that's the balancing of the level of forgiveness and mercy while also seeking justice, which I think is really true.
So we look at the three major world religions. Of course, there are ones outside of this, but the three biggest ones are Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. I think Islam is the biggest right now. When you look at them, I think the way they handle justice and mercy in a social context is very interesting. Of course, you can say there are equal amounts in each, but in practice, I feel like we see Christianity, mercy is just the baseline for everything. It's like Jesus Christ forgives all of our sins. We are always forgiven if we are saved, and that's good and beautiful. And it's not saying we're outside of the law, right? You know, you kill someone, you're going to go to prison, but they're also saying you're not damned to hell if you're saved through Jesus. You know, you're not outside of the earthly constructs of law, but when it comes down to it, you are forgiven. Like the social construct of Islam, it's total opposite. It's like eternal damnation. You need to do all of these things to make yourself right in the eyes of our God. I want to be clear for all of my listeners, because I do get a lot of weird mail sometimes. I know that both religions have different experiences with each. I am just saying what I see in the world today. I feel like Judaism is honestly a mix of both. There is definitely more of a focus of justice, I would say, than Christianity, but I don't think it's as black or white as we see with the Islamic faith. When you look at Christian mysticism, how do you all see justice and mercy? Do you believe in heaven? Do you believe in hell? Do you believe people are damned if they commit bad things? Like, how does someone redeem themselves spiritually? There's so much. I just want you to tell me.
I truly believe and have learned from experience that heaven and hell are places within human consciousness, and we can experience them in a single day. You can have heavenly experiences. You can be in a construct in your imagination and your physical experience that feels like heaven, and then something can shift, and then you can feel like you're in the hell realms. And I do believe that there may be realms of this outside of the body, because I believe all of the universe, all of the cosmos is consciousness and forms and different levels of consciousness. And so maybe once you die, you could be in some kind of realm that feels more heavenly or feels more hellish potentially, or your consciousness could go there. But I don't think that you're going to be condemned to hell forever for certain actions. I don't believe in that. I believe in multiple lifetimes. If your soul doesn't learn certain lessons within one lifetime, you're going to come back in another form, in another body, and see if you get the soul lesson. Some people call these parallel lifetimes, because time is also a construct and a bit of an illusion. And so maybe your soul is living in multiple forms, multiple bodies all at once outside of time, and you're learning these different things in different forms. But in that way, karma is truly happening. And so if you are violating someone in one lifetime and you experience the role of villain, or you experience the role of violator, then in another lifetime, you're probably, maybe the soul that you violated, there's going to be a flip of that, or you're going to have some kind of reconciliation of that energy in another lifetime. And hopefully both of you will learn what's going on between you, and you can close that energy, and you can actually be like, whoa. And this is also what I believe, is that you're not fully separate. We have the illusion of separation. Yes, you have your whole life and all your experiences and everything that makes you super unique. And yet at the core of it, we're both consciousness experiencing itself in form. It's like a white light going through a prism creates all the colors of the rainbow, right? And so it's like you're pink on the rainbow, and I happen to be purple on the rainbow. But we're both from that same one source, that same white light. And we're having different experiences, but at the core, we're the same essence, we're the same consciousness. So when we realize that, it's like everything I do to you, I'm doing to myself. Everything you're doing to me, you're doing to yourself in the end. So like, when we realize that, why would we want to be harming another version of ourselves? Why wouldn't we want to be living in harmony, lifting up this person and celebrating this person and empowering them and doing everything in our power to help them have a better life? And hopefully they're doing the same to us. And I feel like that's the essence and the core of this do unto others as you would have them do unto you trope that's in many religions and in Christianity. This is what I believe. If you're fucking over somebody else, one day you're going to see you were just fucking over yourself in the higher perspective of things.
So you do believe in hell, like a state of mind hell, but yeah. Yeah, hell is a real... Okay, so for you, in erotic mysticism, the concepts of heaven and hell do exist. There's no way to escape your fate.
I do believe we can choose our own destiny when we wake up to, like, we wake up to some higher understanding of it. I think if you believe you're stuck in fate, then you're just going to like keep repeating patterns. But if you believe, oh, I can transcend my fate or whatever, it's like I can learn the lessons and I can integrate them, and then I can move to a higher level of the game of life.
You know, my take on it is heaven and hell exist right now simultaneously. It's really how you choose to perceive this experience and the way you choose to perceive life, aka your free will, of the lens you choose to look at life. Are we about to end all civilization? Is it going down? Or are we on the rise? That's really on you. And whatever lens you choose to view life is all on your choice, on your choices, on how you choose to perceive everything. And that to me goes back to the individual. Back to the sovereignty of you, back to you and your connection to what you believe to be true.
One of the greatest benefits I see to Christianity and Judaism and monotheistic religions, where there is only one lifetime and there's a heaven or hell, it's that the bad things that happen to you in life you know, they're a test from God, or they're ultimately not your fault. You didn't do anything to cause them. They might be here to teach you a lesson, but, you know, my friend that was a victim of pretty serious sexual assault from people she trusted, it wasn't like in a past life she thought, oh, I did that. When you see awful things happen to people with monotheistic religions, it's like that person was evil. It wasn't your fault. When you look at Hinduism or religions where they believe in past lives, those situations, the idea that the bad things that are happening to you are because of a past life, that's reinforcing the case system, saying you deserve your lot in life because of what you did in the past, and you just have to be the best you can in this specific situation, and hopefully things will be better for you next life. I greatly prefer the non-past life viewpoint because I just don't like the idea that bad things happening to you now are because of things you did. What do you all think about that?
Your questions are so good.
I understand how freeing that framework, that worldview can be, because I used to be in it fully and completely. And it does feel freeing. And it feels like, oh, yeah, but it does create a bit of a victim mentality. When bad things happen to you, it's like, oh, I'm the victim. They're the bad guy. I deserve retribution, or I deserve, you know, hell. Thing I really appreciate about this other understanding, whether or not it's about past lives or whether or not it's like God testing you or challenging you, like you can take in both of those perspectives. I'm about taking full responsibility for your situation, like radical responsibility. That is terrifying for the human spirit often, because it's like, I do not want to take responsibility if bad things happen to me or I'm harmed in life. I'm not saying that the person who harmed you is innocent or that they should be let off the hook. That's not what I'm saying at all. They've got their own kind of karma coming to them, and I believe they need to work out their shadows and all that stuff too. But I think there's a different way of empowering yourself to be like, yo, I don't have to be the victim in this situation. I can actually be like, how can I empower myself? How can I lift myself out of what has happened? How can I turn victim consciousness into sovereignty? How can I take full responsibility of everything that happens in my life and become empowered by it rather than made small or powerless by it?
Yes, it's so interesting. I think there are so many different ways you can think about life and the bad things that happen to you and the good things that happen to you.
Well, can I add one thing?
Of course.
It's like, are you just reacting to the things that happen to you, which is a more passive way of going about life? Or are you actively responding? Are you looking at why that might have happened? So I really believe that we create our reality through our beliefs and through the stories that we're telling ourselves, mostly unconsciously, about the way reality works. And reality comes to meet us from those stories that we're weaving. And so what story are you telling yourself? Let's say bad things happen to you every day. What do you believe? An ex had bad things happen to him, like really horrible things. And he had such a story that was reinforced day in, day out, that the world was out to get him. And he was so protectionist, and he had like systems of security every which way protecting him, right? And it attracted even more robbery, assault, like all these things. I have not experienced any of that in my life because I don't believe that about reality. I've experienced certain things in life, and I've come to a place that when I experience something that's off or destabilizing or makes me feel like a victim, I'm like, okay, what part of me believes that I deserve this, or believes that certain people are evil, or believes certain things that I need to look at to change my belief system so I'm not magnetizing or attracting that experience anymore in my life? And that's a very hard pill to swallow for some people. But let me tell you, I've seen over and over and over again how this is true. And when you live from a heart open place, when you live from a place of coherence between your brain and what you believe about the world and the unconditional love frequency, and you're in a place of, I believe the best things are going to happen to me, miracles are going to happen, I'm going to be in synchronistic harmony with different people that are in my life, and we are going to make the world a better place, and you believe it on every level of your being, and you're looking at the shadow parts of you that don't believe that and want to work against that, and you're helping them come into integrity with that belief, your world is going to fucking change. You're going to start seeing miracles more. You're going to start meeting people that are more aligned with you. And you're going to start making more ripples to actually make the world a better place. I've seen it over and over and over again. That's how powerful we are as creators of our own worlds and realities. And that's where Eros and sexual energy comes in, because you can do all the manifestations, practices you want. It will only get you so far. But when you connect your heart, your head, and your sex organs, your sexual energy all together, you can amplify your manifestations with sexual energy so that things happen even quicker and you're manifesting even more beautiful things in the world. And just like the force, you can use that energy to produce negative things and negative results and manipulation and evil. Or you can use it to produce highest good for all, magic and beauty, goodness, truth, and beauty.
Well, all right. I will say, someone who's, again, spiritually agnostic, a bit of an outsider, more spectator, I would say, observer, not outsider. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So I would say the manifestation aspect of mysticism, I can understand for random acts of cruelty. You know, if you're not looking for that, I will say, I think most people in the world have experienced the whole, if I look at the world with the glass half full, more good things happen to me. It's not that that stops bad things, but like overwhelmingly, if you see the good in people, people will respond to you in kind.
Yeah, I'm gonna say to that, you can be doing everything right by the book, whatever that book be, and life is gonna throw you a curveball. That is the human experience. How are we gonna grow without catalyst? And from my perspective, kind of how I've come to perceive cruelty or obstacles in my life, challenges in my life, is that as I've kind of looked back at all of these horrific, traumatic things that have happened to me, at this point, I'm still alive. I know my boundaries more. I know my edges more. I know what works. I know what doesn't. I know what I stand for. And a lot of what I like to teach, especially with people who are trying to find their purpose or their dharma, is where I go, I'm like, let's look at your hero's journey. And in every hero's journey, there's going to be a catalyst. And in every hero's journey, there's going to be a main villain fighting against you. And to me, that's a universal truth about life. There is going to be some sort of antagonistic force that's playing against you as the gift of life. I believe that we as souls are experiencing human life to understand the contrast and the totality of everything that is. And so if everything was rainbows and butterflies all the time, it'd be this wonderful, like beautiful heaven of just love and everything and blah, 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 right? We'd kind of float around and not really learn anything. But how beautiful to experience a life of contrast, one where we get all of the cruelty, anger, hate, darkness, and all of the love and everything else in between, to be able to experience that contrast and oscillate between all of those emotions, to me, is the human experience. And to me, that is soul growth, to be able to experience a life fully, fully felt. And I have yet to meet one person that hasn't had something horrific or cruel happen to them while also simultaneously experiencing some form of love or expansiveness or peaks in life, right? To really live a life fully felt is one that kind of has its peaks and its pits. You know, and so to understand that that is actually a life fully lived is one for me where I'm like, okay, that sucked. You played the bad guy in my movie. And I also am grateful in my life. I have been backstabbed, betrayed, you know, taken advantage of by people that I truly trusted and loved. And now getting to the other side of that, do I hate them? No. I've somehow found a way to love them more and appreciate them for playing that role of my villain in my story. And guess what? If I were to ask them the same thing, they'd probably say, hey, Everett, you played the villain in my story. There's two simultaneous stories that are playing out between both parties at the same time. And to be able to recognize the duality of that is a way to transcend being in this victim consciousness. Poor me. Oh, man. Why me? Why did this have to happen to me? It's like, yes, that sucked. And what am I going to do about it? How am I going to grow from that? How am I going to learn from that? Am I going to stay pinned down and like I was taken from the rest of my life? Or am I going to actually do something and learn something from it and grow from that and hopefully protect other people who I see that are being put in that situation? And so from that perspective, our mess becomes our message, right? Mm. The moral of our story becomes our mission. Mm. And that to me is the fast track of understanding, why do I live? Why do I choose to do the things that I do? Why do I wake up with so much passion for life? What do I actually stand for in life? Well, you know what? I was wronged in all of these ways. You know what? I've learned from that. I choose and seek to protect people from that thing. I choose to serve people to help bring them out of that situation. And so to me, that's a huge marker for what makes the human experience so dynamically beautiful.
And I feel like that's where our practices and beliefs and the beliefs and worldviews of Judeo-Christianity and Islam, they can find some common ground, because it really is about taking the lesson and taking the challenges and transforming that into doing more good in the world and finding your path of service to the whole. And when you think about it too, like any movie that's worth watching is not going to be all happy, happy harmony. You need that inciting incident. You need that conflict to make you want to watch more. And like, I've thought about it before, like certain aspects of our soul, I believe, are just like in full union with thine all the time. It's like bliss or the no thing. It's like either no thing or full bliss. There's probably different aspects and different dimensions. But we have the gift as humans of coming here and getting to experience these hero's journeys over and over, you know? And that's probably why we came here. It's like, it's a gift for our souls. It's an amazing thing that we get to come on this earth playground to have our hero's journey.
Yeah, that makes me think, okay, there's a lot of conflict that happens because of other religions. In fact, when you look at most of the conflict in the world, it is based in religion. There are other things, of course, that are maybe guiding it, but the justification people use is related to religion. What I find super interesting about Christian mysticism and the conflict in it, Christian mysticism, erotic mysticism, plant-based medicine generally plays a role. Most people I know who are involved in mysticism have taken some kind of plant-based medicine relatively frequently. And what I think is really interesting about it is that it can change your whole worldview. It's not that I want to keep bringing up my friend's tragic, horrific experience, but it is relevant to this conversation in many ways. One of which is that her friends were on a significant amount of plant medicine, and they've been doing it for several years. She feels like it warped their worldview of things. You talked about that experience in Tulum, plant-based medicine was involved. And Everett, these people were like in love with her. They did not have the same experience at all. Their brains had been so warped by this medicine that they were like, oh, you're in love with us. You're going to have kids with us. Not at all the reality she was experiencing. When you look at your movement and how much it involves things like MDMA, psilocybin, LSD, I don't even know all the psychedelics. We could just say plant-based medicine as a catch-all for whatever anyone is taking. Austin sober, that's not a joke. People here in Austin, it's really like nothing but the hard drugs. When you look at your movement and how people are taking this medicine that warps their worldview, how do you reconcile that with respect for others? When you're totally sober, you can clearly see how other people are feeling. When you're under plant-based medicine and you're under spiritual influence, I think it's actually really easy to delude yourself. Part of the reason my friend didn't hold anger against these people was she was like, I genuinely think they loved me. She was like, I don't think they thought they were hurting me. I think they thought they were like bringing me into their consciousness. That was a big reason for her just releasing it. Yeah, it's like it obviously had a huge impact on her and her body and her trust, but she ultimately came to the conclusion that it was really the drugs. It's a tagline in a lot of movies. The DARE philosophy they push across America. She was like, if they had never done that, we'd all still be friends. He also would have lived.
So I have had personal experience with mixing psilocybin and sexuality, or even sexual energy. And I have come to the conclusion in my own life that I do not mix those things physically with someone who is not my partner. Personally, I think that it can go to these dangerous places, and so easily someone thinks they can consent in the moment. They think they're consenting, or you think the other person's consenting, and then later they could be like, it was the drugs. I actually didn't want that. And wow, a whole slew of things can happen after that. So for my own personal practice, I do not get physically intimate with other people unless I'm in like a lovership or a primary partnership, a partnership with them, and we're in a special container for that. And we have set our intentions before taking any drug or mind-altering substance, and we've set our boundaries before, we've set our intentions before, when we're sober, we set these things and we do not cross these agreements, even if the erotic energy is running and whatever, but you've said, I do not want certain things to happen. You do not trump those boundaries when you're on plant medicine or any drugs, because that's when problems happen. And one of my teachers was so adamant that if you set your intentions, desires, boundaries, fears, you go over all of this, plus some other things, you make all your agreements before you even run erotic energy, because erotic energy is a mind-altering substance. It's a hormonal concoction that happens in your body, and then you don't think straight anymore. So you create the container beforehand, and then you can start running that energy. So that's my personal opinion about it. Now, I do believe running erotic energy for yourself on a small dose or a microdose of something in a group context where you're being sensual or you're sharing energy or whatever, I think that's a little different and that can be healthier. But again, it's like setting the agreements sober and beforehand is imperative. And I also think people in this community can often overuse and even abuse these substances and call them my medicines. And I've seen that over and over again. And so I use them very sparingly, like a small handful of times in a year. You know, that's very different than, I know people who tobacco snuff every day. It's a tobacco snuff, but it's tobacco, but it's like, it does something chemically in the body. And it's like a tobacco addiction. You're doing whatever it is that you're still outsourcing. And that's not my own personal practice, but so that's where I stand on all of that.
Plant-based medicine, even if you're responsible with it, even if you take it in very limited doses, there's a lot of research backing that it does permanently alter your worldview. That's not always a bad thing. Using the drug that I just mentioned, people who take MDMA tend to believe more people are there to love them, right? I've heard that's a common side effect. We can see that with my friend and the two people who assaulted her. They'd been on MDMA, I think, for like 10 years. Again, sorry to use such a grotesque example. It's just the starkest one I can think of when this kind of stuff goes too far. When you're in your community and you're teaching people, how do you teach them to be responsible with other people's emotions, to understand that just because they may feel loving and that bringing someone into the religion is going to be good for them, it's not always the same. There is that whole wanting to convert, wanting to bring people in and not having bad intentions to them, but maybe pushing them to do things they don't actually want or are not ready for. But it's impossible for you to understand that because your mind has been altered.
I would say, and something that we're very, very adamant about, is consent is key. Anything that we're asking you to do, you have 100% the choice and free will to enjoy or be a part of it at whatever capacity feels good to you. And to me, if that is something that's not communicated or felt during any type of interaction, then there's a red flag, right? If it's like, oh, you know, there's some sort of coaxing that's happening or some sort of power trip to get you to do the thing, that's an immediate red flag. And then when you add in any sort of substance, that's going to amplify everything exponentially. And that's going to make walls come down and open you up both physically and energetically, which makes you way more vulnerable, which then makes the safety piece, the sacredness piece, the consent piece even more important. And so what I find to be interesting too about drugs versus medicine is it really comes down to, are you abusing it or are you working with it as an ally with temperance? And so I know a lot of people that are doing all sorts of substances and calling it medicine. It becomes some sort of thing that they're using to escape from life or to be whole from, which goes to that I'm outsourcing myself. So those who are actually fully self-sourced and coming from a place of I'm whole, I'm doing this now to expand my perspective, to learn something new about myself. It ceases to become this dependency. And I say this thing, are you taking the medicine or is the medicine taking you? You know? Are you just fully abusing this thing, which is possible? Is this medicine fully taking you over? Or are you working together as allies and doing it in a way that creates overflow, harmony, hopefully growth, and greater insights? And for you to say that it changes your worldview, 100% it does. And it can completely shift your worldview. And I've seen some really great people go off the deep end because they didn't practice that level of temperance or even consent with themselves going into this process. And then it becomes just a crutch in all aspects. And I've also seen people lean into these medicines and it allows for them to see aspects of themselves that they never have before. And so really it's a tool, just like a knife is. A knife can be used to kill somebody. A knife can be used to cut the most amazing, delicious meal that nourishes you. So it's really on you, the user, to use it with the intention that you choose to get out of it and to put into it.
I mean, I agree with you. I think in general, with all things in life, you have to be able to exercise caution. I think the thing that was so unsettling for me, like just listening to my friend talk about it, was that these people, through the heavy use of MDMA, had created the whole fake relationship with her. Like the idea of consent, they personally felt like she had already given it to them. The dangers of plant-based medicine, I feel like they are not always fully given to people when they're being taken in advance. That's all I have to say about it. It's not like alcohol. It's not like smoking. It can't be treated like those things because alcohol wears off. Smoking, you get negative effects from it over time. But I genuinely think plant-based medicine does permanently change how you see other people.
I would say and recommend to anybody who's listening, if you do feel called to medicine, psychedelics, or medicine-like substances, that you do so with a facilitator or a shaman who you actually genuinely feel safe with. And that's on you and your discernment.
Hey everyone. Normally, I do not retroactively add comments to my interviews because I feel like that hurts the authenticity of everything. But as I was editing, I just felt so compelled to make this PSA to all of you. Do not hire a fucking shaman. Do not hire a shaman. Oh my God. You are not in the jungle. If you really want a spiritual experience, go get some of your friends. Get a bottle of whiskey. And drive to Marfa, okay? That is going to be better than going to the Austin Shamanic? I don't know how to do any of this. It's going to be a better experience than going there to do some kind of weird energy medicine, silent meditation, retreat, mysticism, foundational training. Okay, you're going to talk to a white person who is wearing fake blood on their face, a fox hat. It's a real fox. Like, the fox died for that white person to wear that hat. And, like, chains all over their body. Okay, it's weird. It is weird. I am trying not to be judgmental, but please just don't do that. Okay, thank you. All right, now we're going to go back to our regularly scheduled programming.
We have gone sick by following a path of untrammeled rationalism, male dominance, attention to the visible surface of things, practicality, bottom lineism. We have gone very, very sick. And the body politic, like any body, when it feels itself to be sick, it begins to produce antibodies or strategies for overcoming the condition of dis-ease. And the 20th century is an enormous effort at self-healing. Phenomena as diverse as surrealism, body piercing, psychedelic drug use, sexual permissiveness, jazz, experimental dance, rave culture, tattooing, the list is endless. What do all these things have in common? They represent various styles of rejection of linear values. The society is trying to cure itself by an archaic revival, by a reversion to archaic values. So when I see people manifesting sexual ambiguity, or scarifying themselves, or showing a lot of flesh, or dancing to syncopated music, or getting loaded, or violating ordinary canons of sexual behavior, I applaud all of this because it's an impulse to return to what is felt by the body. The world is a living mystery. Our birth, our death, our being in the moment, these are mysteries. They are doorways opening on to unimaginable vistas of self-exploration, empowerment, and hope for the human enterprise. And our culture has killed that, taken it away from us, made us consumers of shoddy products and shoddier ideals. We have to get away from that. And the way to get away from it is by a return to the authentic experience of the body. The hour is late. The clock is ticking. We will be judged very harshly if we fumble the ball. We are the inheritors of millions and millions of years of successfully lived lives and successful adaptations to changing conditions in the natural world. Now the challenge passes to us, the living, that the yet to be born may have a place to put their feet and a sky to walk under. There is nothing as powerful, as capable of transforming itself and the planet as the human imagination. Let's not sell it straight. Let's not whore ourselves to nitwit ideologies. Let's not give our control over to the least among us. Rather, you know, claim your place in the sun and go forward into the light. The tools are there. The path is known. You simply have to turn your back on a culture that has gone sterile and dead and get with the program of a living world and a re-empowerment of the imagination. Thank you very, very much.